This is Scattered Cells, episode number 6. Ba 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 ba. Dun, 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 dun. Today is the beginning of a change in Scattered Cells. We have here a new guest, or not even a guest, a new co-host, a third, a triumvirate, a trinity even, of a lesser sort. Why don't you introduce yourself?
I'm just so glad you... yes, my name is Jeremy. I am the organizer of Anime Souffle out of Los Angeles, the club which Michael belongs to as well, which he's a co-organizer. I'm so glad Mikey brought out the professional sound effects to introduce me. I greatly appreciate that. Another way to make me sound good. Appreciate it. But no, I was asked by Mike to come on and help you guys out. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like with the sound effects, you might need a little help.
I'm sure it's a lot of help.
Yeah.
Because I think people really hate my voice, so, yeah.
No, I think the first time it's because the sound quality was a little bit poor, but now all of our sound is just fine. So.
That's because I was fighting some, like, that's because I was fighting some aliens, so,
yeah.
You know, like, they use sound attacks,
right? Yeah.
Right, so, like.
And this, yeah. Of course, is Raymond Hughes, the co-host, the regular. And,
excellent.
They'll say hello.
Well, at least you didn't sound like Regis Philbin. That's that's good.
People sound huskier and sexier when they have a cold. I've noticed this in more than one podcast when the announcer or the host was actually sick. They actually sound better on the radio. It's really weird.
Yeah, you know, that's what I found out too. Like, yeah. when I have a cold,
yeah.
I just sound like I'm hot.
I know. It's weird.
But
there was an entire Friends episode about that once, I think.
Really?
Excellent.
Yeah. But I'm sure. Well, I'm glad this is not the Mushishi world, because yeah. We forget that bug that eats voices. Oh, yeah. You know, some people will be happy though.
Oh yeah. Now everything anyway. In Mushishi like makes a lot of sense in a way, because it's always connected to people's sadness in one way or tragedy. At least that's how all the episodes I've seen. That's what it seems like. And
well, it's a standard pattern.
Yeah.
But...
Oh, you've seen, like, how much of Mushishi have you seen, actually?
Like, kind of like a one and a half, because the show on TV on Sunday.
Oh,
yeah. I saw this episode, yeah, where this kid, well, no, like, this village, like, it's extremely quiet.
Uh-huh.
And when it snows, you can't hear anything, but then it got really, 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 really quiet when these quiet bugs come in, mm-hmm. like moo or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're called Mushi, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Not quite, I mean, the bug itself is the name.
Oh, okay.
Mushi is the general term, and then...
Yeah.
Then you got this,
yeah.
And then you got this bug called Ah, and this bug eats silence. Mm. So you hear a bunch of bug like mushy voices, noises, whatever.
Yeah, I like how metaphorical a lot of the Mushishi episodes are. Like a lot of them are like just like the mushy or the bugs or the primitive life forms that are somewhere in between plants and animals. Usually, yeah, they usually represent or right. They usually take on something about like. The human condition or whatever, and it works really well. Like every episode is really tightly written, and I really admire that. And I have to thank Jeremy because the very first Anime Souffle meeting I went to, you guys were sharing Mushishi, and that's how I found out about the show.
Yeah, what do you think about it, Jeremy?
No, I really like the show. Actually, it's gotten a lot of high praise from our anime fans of the club. Mm-hmm. As well. A few do not like the slower pacing of it, but I like the fact that it kind of delves in the mythological / spiritual / because it even deals with kind of the physical aspect. Actually, I was reading something on the Wikipedia about the design of Mushi being similar to a phenomenon called floaters. I don't know if you guys know about that.
Floaters?
It's actually the things that you can sometimes see in your eyes
yeah.
when you're staring in the sky.
That's exactly yeah. what I've yeah, actually, yeah, yeah. they reminded me of, actually. Yeah. It's those are like dust and other things that like float in your eye. That's
yeah,
what
that's right.
That's what they are. But,
that's right.
Or like dead cells that, yeah.
You mean these aren't bugs and parasites? Wow. I always thought they were kind of bugs. Some also bugs and parasites.
Well, mushi means bug.
Right.
That's why the... Actually, that's really that's something I wanted to talk about later, but they're calling... They're going to be releasing it in English-speaking territories, and they're going to call it Bugmaster. Which is such a silly-sounding title, except that's the literal... That is the literal translation of Mushishi. Really.
Literal translation, but I mean, I have qualms with that because I don't think when they created it, you know, they were literally referring to bugs, and I think if you had any sense of the story, it would be give you somewhat pause. I mean, I've seen other people translate it just to Mushi Master for a little more clarity, but and then you could kind of come to understand what Mushi are from the series, which I think is a better approach, because I think Bugmaster, you know, we kind of wonder if he's like wielding a pesticide tank or something going around Japan.
1-800 Bugmaster.
He does sound like an exterminating company. Anyway.
Where do ants?
He's fought. I just thought maybe, you know, the thing was he'd fought such vicious bugs that one of them actually took out one of his eyes, so. And that was a story.
Yeah.
Starship Troopers.
Oh, no.
If you have Starship Troopers size of bugs, call 1-800 Bugmaster.
Yeah. Right, right.
Bugbusters.
Another interesting note on that, too, his name in the story, Ginkgo.
Yeah.
You guys know that literally that can be translated out to bank.
Really? I actually think of like a certain, you know, the root, Ginkgo root, but
it might be pronounced differently, but
Ginkgo,
yeah.
Oh, Ginkgo, yeah, that's right. No, he's right. No, Jeremy's
that's
right.
Funny
though.
Because
yeah.
Yeah.
So
especially that since he's been the house to so many types of mushi, and he has kind of a wealth of knowledge. So you know. We could be really stretching it there, but that's just what makes me think of.
We've been stretching on this show like for many years. So, but Mike, I guess
that's what you gotta do.
Well, I just wanted to ask Jeremy, since in the first episode, Ray and I kind of talked a little bit about how we got into anime. So, if you could sort of give your anime biography a little bit and see how you got into it and how you ended up being the president of a club of all things. I mean. You're a bigger fan than me.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. It's that's a whole other story. We can get into the club thing. I'll swing back around to that. But I'll start with your first question about how that basically I got into anime. I mean, just like everybody else, I had an introduction to anime through the typical shows that happened to make their way in the U.S. in the 80s, like Voltron and Transorz. You know, I caught a couple of those. Let's see, what else would have come over? Macross.
Right.
Came over for a little bit, although it was pretty heavily changed to Robotech and whatnot. So, I mean, I caught some of those things. I mean, that piqued an interest, but it wasn't what really drew me into anime. And actually, it's funny, though, I didn't really get drawn into anime until I... moved to Tennessee from Michigan, of all places. You'd think Tennessee would not be a place to get really drawn into anime, but with an extreme amount of boredom being out in the countryside there, I would go to visit my friends in Nashville who happened to be fairly rabid anime fans, and they would watch things like, at the time, Rama 1/2, and as I was watching it, I was just like, this is crazy. What is this? This is cool. I like this. And I had no idea what the heck was going on. I mean, right off the bat, the whole gender bender thing was a little confusing at first, and why one guy was changing into a panda and one a girl was a little bit, like I said, confusing. But I really, really thought it was really just a hilarious concept, and it was just something very different from what I'd seen from American animation. So. It just led me to follow up and go to a couple of conventions with some of my friends. Actually, I'll give a plug for them, too. They actually, out of Nashville, they had up a small convention called MTAC. It's a Middle Tennessee Anime Convention, and they run Anime Nashville out there. So shout out to Phil and all those guys if they happen to hear this. They took me to Anime Week in Atlanta. Was the first convention that I went to, and from there, you know, I got to see a lot of. The only convention I've been to, and I'm sure it's probably changed, where I was able to watch a considerable amount of fan subs. You don't see that often now because most of it's pretty corporate. But watch Kotocha. Kotocha was one thing that I watched. And I was really into that. I thought that was cool stuff.
You've never seen Eva.
Yeah, that's how I got into. I'm sorry, what's that?
You've never seen Evangelion.
Neon Genesis Evangelion.
Evangelion, right. I did actually see Evangelion. I got a chance to see that. I'm trying to remember if I saw that first at a convention. I think I saw a couple episodes, maybe at the same convention as well. So,
did you see it early in your career?
It started to become pretty popular.
Yeah, it was...
It was coming in about that time.
Mid-90s.
It had become somewhat popular, pretty early on.
Oh.
Yeah.
I don't know if it had become notorious yet.
By the second or third anime convention I went to had, there was about, at least a dozen or so anime music videos made to it. And for some reason, everybody liked to use... Father of Mine by Everclear. That was
either that or Linkin
done
Park.
To death.
It's either that or Linkin Park. It's either.
Right.
Yeah. You can always gauge.
So I
made an anime video out of it.
Anyways, the club is a whole other
story.
Cool. Yeah.
What's up?
No, I said I made an anime video out of it too, but for my project.
Right? Oh, okay.
Yeah, I used this Christian group song for it, so I forgot the name.
This
Christian group.
Did you say what's the name of the band?
I can't remember now, but they sing one of those kind of like closer to alternative and crap. When I remember it, I'll put it up next time, but I forgot. Sorry.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, upload it to YouTube one of these days or something, because one of these days. Yeah,
that's cool though. Yeah.
Well, that seems to be the outlet now that we didn't have that back when people were first doing anime music videos. It seems like now every 12-year-old kid is doing an anime music video on his Mac or something, and uploading it to YouTube.
Yeah,
regardless of quality.
Yeah.
Which is can be good, can be bad.
Well, it's Sturgeon's law, right? 90% of everything is crap, you know.
Right.
Nah, I didn't know you've seen so many.
10%.
Yep. You always want to try to be in the good in the 10%, but I've never tried making an anime music video myself, though I've had a few ideas kicking around in my head before, but
oh, make one. It's fun.
Yeah.
Make one. It's fun, you know? Like if no one else ever watches it, watch it yourself. And Science Theater 3000,
Somebody needs to do another.
Yeah, definitely. I
think I showed you guys.
Evangelion.
I played you guys the Evangelion Redeath. Yeah, that was really fun. A lot of people seem to like that. That's normally a video.
Now, what was that one called? Because
it's called Evangelion Redeath. And it's done by a group called
Redeath, okay.
It's done by a group called Studio Sokode, and they normally play that video only at conventions. Like they don't distribute it online or anything officially. You have to sort of snag a copy elsewhere. And they've done lots of other similar fan dubs ever since. Like not just Evangelion. They also did one for Escafone, they did one for Cowboy Bebop, they did one for a lot of the popular anime from around the turn of the century, like around late 90s, early 2000. And but yeah.
You know, one of these episodes, we should just Mystery Science Theater 3000 something.
We should
for 30 minutes.
We should do that. What we should do actually is what we can do is we can make a commentary track, basically. We'd all like start like a file, the same file, at exactly the same time. Like, I'll tell you to
play. Yeah, exactly. We just watch the same show. Yeah. And even if we don't exactly match, like maybe your computer is fast, it goes blah, 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 and my computer goes,
that's unlikely.
Well, I think I'm going to get in the EVA. You know, that would still be funny.
No, that would be a wonderful idea. I think that would actually help maybe even draw some more listeners, because that's like something I haven't seen anybody do that yet. That's actually unique.
Nah, we got to do it before everyone else do it.
Mike, I would say that that might actually work with one of the series that you've been watching recently that you mentioned in your last email.
Oh, yeah. Kyoshiro...
what's the title of that?
It's called Kyoshiro something... Totowa no Sora. I saw the first three episodes.
Oh,
my lord. It's so, like... It wants to be good, but it's, like, so over the top. And I'll talk about it later. It's worthy of a good laugh.
Oh my god! I gotta download and give it a shot. Then
I watched that and made a few notes myself on that.
Yeah, it's so. Like,
I gotta say,
how far did you get?
Really?
Because it has a certain pattern that only shows up after the first episode, especially episode two. Oh boy!
Right.
Oh boy. Anyway, we'll talk about that in a minute. Good times.
Yeah,
anyway, so why don't we go on and go ahead to do the news section? I just want to go through some news sections, and everybody can just do any kind of roundtable reaction. And I've kind of picked news items to sort of tailor to one or the other of you. So anyway, here we go. First news item up for bids is... something, again, it's good. It's about Mushishi, because we were talking about Mushishi a little bit earlier.
Mushishi. Sumomomomomomomo.
That's another wonderful show, actually. But that's actually really funny.
Bless you, my brother.
In either case, there has a live-action Mushishi movie was recently released. And apparently it got shown at the Sundance Film Festival, which is going on right now in Park City, Utah. And it impressed the audience sufficiently enough that several distributors in America are interested now in picking it up. And once again, it is going to be retitled Bugmaster.
1-800 Bugmaster.
Yep. Bugmaster. But apparently it did impress an American audience.
Yes.
And it's actually, it's interesting. Here's another thing. It's actually directed by Katsuhiro Otomo. You might remember him as the director of Akira. So it's apparently his first, I think it's his first live action film. Believe it or not. So that's really interesting.
That's really interesting.
Yeah. That's a pretty big name.
Anime tackling live action.
Yeah. Well, I know Mamoru Oshii has done one live action movie called Avalon. And so
I've seen it too.
I actually borrowed Ray's copy, so yeah.
It's not bad.
It's not bad, but it's definitely an Oshii film. Like, if you have to like Oshii's other stuff, like his Ghost in the Shell movies, they really appreciate it.
It's actually philosophical.
Didn't he do another film? It was about actually animators. I forget the name of it. It was like
he did a
head case or something like that.
I don't know. I do seem to remember that he's also done some other live action projects as well. I mean, his last movie,
one seemed very much like a student film.
I mean, Oshii's first film was an experimental art house animated film called Angel's Egg, and that was done in the mid-80s. And that features character designs by, what's his name, Yoshitaka Amano, the guy who does all the Final Fantasy character designs.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And here's another thing that's really interesting about Oshii. Oshii is he's a former seminarian. He was actually studying in theology in seminary for a while before he decided to become a film director. So
is he Christian at all?
He's an ex-Christian. He actually lost his faith. Angel's Egg, the first Angel's Egg film, is actually a metaphorical description of how he lost his faith. And he's a lot like, if anything, like Martin Scorsese. That's what his story reminds me of. Scorsese actually was studying to be a Catholic priest, and then he kind of lost that too. So,
Vincent Lombardi was studying to be a Catholic priest.
Yeah.
Okay, how did Vince Lombardi come to Bugmaster?
Well, Jack White, too, actually, strangely enough. Mm-hmm. Jack White from the White Stripes.
Oh, really? Oh, the guy from the band, yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. Explains a lot of the, in which I've known that too, but for people that don't know, the biblical references in a lot of his books, he uses a lot of like references to particular verses from the Bible, like in his stories. Talking Head, though, was the name of the film that I was talking about earlier. Talking Head. Really strange film. It's a surreal piece. Not terribly good, I'm afraid, but.
Is it more strange than the head of John Malkovich or the something of John Malkovich?
Being John Malkovich.
Being John Malkovich. Yeah, it's actually just more bad. Anything, it's just more bad. I mean, I like Momoroshi, but this is a bad film. I tried watching it and I just couldn't make it through. It definitely would be a Mystery Science Theater film.
See, Oshii isn't, in my experience watching Oshii movies, Oshii is usually not very, very interested in telling a story. He's usually more interested in talking about something philosophical. He wears his education on his sleeve all the time, especially in the second Ghost in the Shell movie. Half the dialogue in Ghost in the Shell Set 2 is not even dialogue. It's just quotations from the Bible, from Shakespeare, from all these random philosophers I've never even heard of. And, I mean, it's really weird because he just really wants to overpower you with his education. And I don't know. I don't really like that either.
That's dumb. I think most anime audience is just looking for boobs and guns.
or cheap laughs.
I mean, I can deal with the little philosophers as long as it has some boobs and guns. You know, they can be quoting philosophy if they're, you know, have the boobs and guns. No, I'm just...
The Ghost in the Shell TV show at least balanced it out, the philosophy out with boobs and guns. And it... And some pretty thoughtful politics, actually, too. But
I really do. I actually do like when animes tend to be thought-provoking and whatnot. But I think, you know, you can go too far in the extreme, and I think he definitely did that in the second movie because it was really hard to follow, and it was just like there wasn't enough action because most people that were coming to see that film were looking to see you know what they remember from the original.
Really?
Yeah.
I guess I didn't miss much then. I've had it for like ever, but I haven't watched it. I just had this really, really bad feelings about it every time I picked up the disc, and I go, oh well, and I put it back down. So
it's actually visually really spectacular. Seriously, it's actually worth watching at least once just to look at the CGI.
To
look at the visuals.
Give me that.
And the music, the way the visuals and the music work together is really well done, actually. But there's just
not... Does the Major wear skin-tight suits?
Later on, the incarnation of the Major that shows up, because she's not in the movie for most of it, it's mostly Bakato. But the Major does kind of show up in sort of like a kind of half cameo role near the end, and she has like this sexy woman doll body or whatever, like because she lost her original body, and her mind is inhabiting all these like dolls that are supposed to be like electronic prostitutes or whatever or something like that. I don't even remember exactly.
She's a god of she's a god of a horse.
Well, she is something of almost of a quasi goddess figure in the second film.
I thought so.
She's like a voice in Bateau's head, like for most of the movie. And
she's always a voice in someone's head, like in Ghost in the Shell. Like a lot of times, like Bateau, do this, do that.
Yeah, that's very much like what's going on in Ghost in the Shell too. It's really Bateau. He's trying to forget the Major, but he can't forget her because she keeps popping up in his head all the time.
Man, I was like, just shut up, man. Like, I just shut up. Like, I haven't married you yet. Just shut up. Oh, wait. That was not nice. I'm sorry. Anyway. I guess,
That's pretty much... I guess we exhausted Mushishi earlier in this show, so...
Right.
Sure,
yeah.
Anno directed.
Anno's the director of Evangelion. He would actually be he wouldn't be a good director for Mushishi. It's too restrained.
Of course not.
It's too restrained. Anno's actually really over the top. And so there's a lot of screaming in his shows. Screaming.
And, okay.
Yeah, Mushishi's too quiet.
Screaming and or whining.
Yeah.
Depending on Shinji or not.
Yeah.
So.
Oh my god. Yeah. Can you imagine the boy character? Go ahead, sorry.
Anyway, second news item is that Funimation has announced a whole bunch of licenses this week, and they have licensed not only Mushishi to anime, they've also licensed Suzuka, which was a show. Yeah, I don't know if a lot of people know about that show. I actually watched a good part of that. And also Ragnarok, the animation.
I've seen an episode.
Ragnarok. I don't know if you all know Ragnarok, the MMORPG.
Based on the game?
Yeah, it's based on the game. And,
yeah.
Suzuka is a really... I'm actually really surprised Suzuka got licensed. It's, because Suzuka is not, to me, seems to have a relatively limited audience. Mainly, it's about a guy who is in love with this hopelessly athletic and beautiful and cute and incredibly mean girl. Incredibly. And she just keeps blowing him off all the time. And that seems to be the whole story. And then he tries to settle for second best with this other woman. And that doesn't, that probably doesn't work out. I didn't actually finish watching the whole show because I lost interest. And
Jeremy, you have something to say?
You know, actually, on that, that's interesting because the first episode and the way that it's kind of pitched leads you to believe it's going to be another pseudo love Hina, and I'm afraid that's how they're going to try to market it a little bit.
It's much more
because
serious
of the popularity of the first episode actually has a lot of similarities. It's pretty interesting. I mean, it seems like Yamoto, the main character, he's just kind of like a much more confident Kitaro. He's like Kitaro with some balls, basically.
Yeah, he's not a moron. He doesn't cower like an abused child the way Kitaro does when he gets beaten.
Right, exactly. But he does end up in really awkward simulations, awkward situations that are much similar to Kitaro's mishaps.
But you guys don't understand, he's pain. I'm just kidding. Go ahead. Sorry.
No, actually we do. It's just... it's just that he probably just needs to quit whining about it so much.
Right. Well, maybe he should learn Kendo from the Kendo group, you know? Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
he does try to work on being a track star or whatever, or running fast, and he actually makes progress. And later on in the show, like he actually does become
a Suzuka
guy. Yeah, the Suzuka guy. He actually because he wants to impress Suzuka, he becomes a runner. He's actually a fairly decent athlete. But he's just not. But Suzuka is national champion class, and so obviously nothing except that is going to impress her. So he has to keep working really, really, really hard.
Well, like I say, he should learn Kendo. He should just learn Kendo, catch a sword with his hands. Yeah, try it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but and then the other one is just Ragnarok the animation. I don't know. I've never played Ragnarok. I have some friends who have.
I don't care.
It has really cute looking characters. Sure. And actually, if I recall, Ragnarok isn't Ragnarok a Korean game?
Yeah, that's correct. And that's what's kind of confusing about the whole thing, actually. Because you don't tend to see a lot of crossover like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, Korean manga or manhwa has actually been making something of some inroads here in America lately. Tokyopop has been publishing a number of Korean and even Korean-American artists.
I want to hear more about the Ragnarok. Mm-hmm. So, Jeremy, you play Ragnarok, right?
Actually, I have not played Ragnarok. That's actually incorrect.
Okay.
But my brother was a pretty big Ragnarok fan for a while, so that's how I'm familiar with it.
So how was the game?
I would watch him play for hours on it.
Okay. So how was the game?
It's old school style chibi characters. You know, chibi Final Fantasy adventure.
Yeah.
Actually, I think I did try to play it once with him, but it's just a massive multiplayer online game.
Does it have a good story?
It's an MMO.
I really didn't get too far into it. It's just more doing missions and quests.
I think the anime didn't receive great reviews. Because it didn't have a good story to back it up with. Oh well.
There hasn't really been a good Final Fantasy movie or show really either. There's been several There was Advent Children, which was probably it's the best attempt so far, but even that one was pretty actually quite frankly it was pretty bad story wise.
Really?
It had good visuals, but the story was really like overbaked and thin and pretentious too. Just like Final Fantasy VII, the game, but except Final Fantasy VII, the game was more engaging.
Well, I guess the point is to watch Cloud kick ass. all of them kicking ass in the fight scenes, you know?
It's really all... Actually, it seems like every... Cloud is, like, the only character who really shows up all the time from the original game, and a little bit of Sephiroth, but all the other characters make cameos, and it's really obvious that they're cameos. Like, here, Cloud, and it's like you see what's his name, Barrett, the Mr. T lookalike, and
Mr. T, right?
Yeah, and of course, and there's Tifa is also actually kind of important. The only part I really enjoyed was when Tifa and some other guy were having a fight, and Tifa appears to have beaten the guy, and he's kind of on the ground, and suddenly the guy's cell phone rings, and his cell phone ringtone. Is the Final Fantasy VII like victory music? You know, victory music. Da 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 da. It keeps ringing over and over and over again. It was lame, but it was funny.
Oh my!
Yeah,
that is such an awful tribute. Awful referencing.
That's made to make the fanboys cackle out loud, I think. And
and you laughed.
I did laugh, so it worked on me, so I guess I can't complain too much.
You know, there's a certain amount of that that's fine, and it's good to do in a way, but at some point I think it does become a lot. okay, sure. Yeah.
And anyways.
The other important licensing news this week is that Bandai has licensed Gunbuster 2, otherwise known as Die Buster, Tapo Narai 2, or goes by other titles. Gunbuster is their first Gunbuster is... well-known for being the directorial debut of Hideaki Anno, who eventually would go on to make Evangelion. And it features a lot of similar stylistic devices. And but the new Gunbuster, the Gunbuster sequel, was actually directed by Kazuya Suramaki, who was basically Anno's right-hand man. He was also the director of Fooly Cooly. You've seen that, right, Jeremy?
Yes.
Fooly Cooly. And it features a lot of the same spastic... style, visual style as Fooly Cooly, but not nearly as much.
Kaboom! Just kidding.
Yeah. That's the anime that made me want to buy a yellow Vespa.
It made me want to play in a rock band again. Because it features a girl who hits people on the head with a bass guitar.
Kaboom!
Yeah.
Quick drum girl. Not really.
But Gunbuster 2 is actually not too bad. I think I finished watching it recently, and it's actually worthy of a really. It has some really good animation, and the later episodes are actually really good. It's some of the best stuff Gainax has put out in a long time. Like it temporarily restored hope that Gainax hadn't completely turned into hacks, because a lot of the shows that they've put out recently have been really like cliched and unoriginal. And
what do you think, Jeremy? What do you think?
As far as Gainax, I haven't watched give me an example of what you think is a really hacked story that they put out recently. Cause...
The second season of Mahoromatic, This Ugly and Beautiful World.
Oh.
Actually, I would say Mahoromatic was the beginning of the decline. I think that show redeemed itself eventually, but at least the first season did. But they after Fooly Cooly, they really haven't put out anything wildly original. Except maybe for Benabashi. That's the only one that I find to be really original.
And even been a little while ago.
Yeah.
So. I think I would pretty much agree with that, I guess. I mean, I like their old stuff. I actually really liked Karikana, though.
Karikana is wonderful until the last four episodes, but. Yeah.
Okay.
Karikana is one. It's the last good thing, really good thing Anno put out.
Shoujo. War shoujo.
Well, you know, it's, I mean, I'm not really particularly into shoujo, but for shoujo, I mean, it's pretty darn good. Just because they had a lot of wacky stuff going on, it just,
Oh, dear. I like him, I don't like him. I like him, I don't like him. Actually, we can just cut that short. Oh, that's right. I like him, and she likes me. Alrighty, then.
No, they cut that out after four episodes in Karikana.
That's right.
That was a little refreshing about it.
That's what I said. That's what I said. Oh, wait, we don't want to drag that out. Oh, okay, I like you. Okay, you like me. Let's go out. Done.
Yeah, hey, Jeremy, if you like Karikana, I really highly recommend Honey and Clover. It's basically the same kind of vibe, except with college-age kids. So it's a little more mature.
That's what you've been saying.
Yeah.
It's funny, actually.
I was heavily pushing for that, like to show that in the club, but I gave up after a while because apparently every time. Hey, Jeremy, should we use our free organizer slot to put code GAYASS in the packet again?
It's really up to you guys. Yeah. I mean, we can. To put it in the. Oh, you mean actually put it officially in there?
Because we have a fourth. We always have a fourth slot open just for us, so.
Well, I think you probably
make sure you call it gay ass.
And we really make sure you say gay ass. Is Brandon coming? Because Brandon was the one pushing for that show.
Yeah, I think he is planning on coming, but I don't know. I mean, it's okay.
It is pretty violent.
Qualities.
It is pretty violent. It's actually kind of darker than a lot
that's
of stuff.
That's half the fun, actually. Yeah.
If you look at the show title while you're watching the show, you wouldn't think it's so violent. Gay ass. You can have your ass off. I think.
I don't know how it's actually. Do they ever pronounce that word on the show anywhere?
No. Not yet. I think so.
I just
call
wonder,
it gay ass.
I think everybody really calls it Lelouch. Because Lelouch, that's like the main title it goes by.
Sure.
Lelouch. But it's. I'm sure when they release it in the United States, they'll just call it Lelouch. Just like they renamed Laputa.
A gay ass boy.
Yeah. They refer to
it as a gay ass pilot.
That was funny. I was really planning on bringing that up. Laputa.
Yeah. Laputa.
The gay ass.
That's funny. You know, actually, funny story.
I
was looking for that DVD, and Fry's Electronics, and I approached the girl who was working that area. And I asked her. It just so happened she's Latin, and so she looked at me really funny. I was like. You know, I'm really sorry about that. That's actually really the name, but it doesn't mean that. Well, it might, but
actually, it does. But.
It's about something entirely different. It's a Miyazaki film, okay?
Well, she works at the anime section. She should know something about it, right?
You know, I think she knew the English name because everybody here that's not an otaku.
Yeah.
You know, and she wasn't specifically in the anime section, so.
Oh.
Castle in the Sky, yeah.
Yeah, Castle in the Sky.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. For the life of me, I couldn't remember the English name.
No.
So. You could all blame Jonathan Swift, because he was the one who came up with a floating castle in the sky called Laputa, because he was deliberately insulting, like, scientific people around the 1700s, and so.
Oh, yeah, last episode we said we should let Jim Carrey. Starring the live action film, like made by this, directed by this guy, if this guy were alive today.
Hmm. Oh my.
Jim Carrey.
Yeah, I'm not sure I want to see that. That just, that's giving me nightmares already.
Jim Carrey has actually shown some real range in his acting lately, though. He's done taken on some more serious roles, like in Eternal Sunshine, The Spotless Mind.
Right.
And he's actually, I really love Eternal Sunshine, so. Anyway,
last
news item. For bids today is Goro Miyazaki, the other Miyazaki.
The other white Miyazaki. No, wait, that's something
else. He's Hayao Miyazaki's son, and he just recently put out his first film, which is called Ghetto no Senki, which is based on Ursula K. Le Guin's Ursti trilogy. He has just won, quote-unquote, the Raspberry Awards in Japan this year. The Raspberry Awards, we have an equivalent award here in America, of course. It's... Of course, the award's given for the worst movie and worst director of the year. And he has taken top place for worst movie and worst director.
Now, you noticed, though, that Da Vinci Code was number 3 on that.
That's true.
Along with Tom Hanks' as worst actor.
Yes. Tom Hanks actually got worst actor.
Wow.
And I don't know. You know more about voice actresses and actresses than I do, Ray. Do you know who Masami Nagasawa is?
Was he in Oh My Goddess? It's a guy or a girl?
It's a girl.
Oh, then I'm sorry, I don't know. Because you said Miyazaki usually don't use the actresses that we usually hear. So
I have no idea who Masami Nagasawa is, but she got worst actress. Interesting. The Promise, which was a Chinese movie, made number 5 on the worst movie list. And I can tell you, I've seen like the first 30 minutes of that movie. It is a very bad movie. It's a very bad movie made by a very good director. Chen Kaiga. And it's really, it was a real disappointment. Like, the CGI was so cheesy, the acting was so over the top and so bad, and it is a bad movie. So it deserves to be on.
Has anybody else seen the Son of Miyazaki film? Has anybody seen it?
it's not going to be released in the United States until 2008 when Sci-Fi Channel's rights to the Earthseed trilogy run out, because they made their own adaptation of the Earthseed Chronicles.
Yeah, I noticed that.
And that really, like, that adaptation made Ursula K. Le Guin very angry. She really hated it. And I read the Earthseed trilogy when I was a kid. It's one of the formative fantasy novels in my development as a fantasy writer. And I really love them, but Le Guin has never been happy with any adaptation of her work, including Miyazaki's. She actually Miyazaki, Hayao Miyazaki, big Miyazaki, good Miyazaki, he actually offered to do an adaptation.
The Black Miyazaki? Just kidding.
He actually offered, like, about 20 years ago, or right around the time when he just started Studio Ghibli, to do an adaptation of Hayao Miyazaki, of Ursula K. Le Guin's novels, and she turned him down. And at that time, so
wow, that may have been a mistake.
I think in retrospect that was a big mistake, because she got the lesser of two Miyazaki. So
yeah, it's really a shame too, because actually, I was looking at the trailer for it. I mean, it seemed slow. It seemed like the story, even in the trailer, and that may have been one of the problems, that it got played out really slow. Mm-hmm. But I mean, animation-wise, it looked clean and everything, and looked much like the. Which was really weird, because that he was completely modeling after his father's style, but looked much like the elder Miyazaki style. In fact, there was a character, and I'm not sure what the character was, but it looks like a character from a Nazca Valley of the Wind.
Well, it's because it's a Studio Ghibli production, so they're going to have the same artists, and it's going to have the same character design overall, I think, for the most part. And I mean, it goes under the Ghibli name. And
yeah. Which may be unfortunate. Yeah, I don't know. I can't imagine, though. Just a note on that, and I know we need to move on, but, being the son of Miyazaki, that's going to be hard enough as it is.
Yeah.
Of Hayao.
Oh, yeah.
And then to try to follow in your father's footsteps, and then on your attempt like that to, fail horribly like that.
Not only that, Hayao Miyazaki publicly dissed his son. Like, he says, like, he's been opposed to his son entering the film business from the very beginning. It's like he keeps saying, he says several times, like, to the press, I really wish my son was doing something else. That's
like
really
doctor or lawyer.
So I kind of feel sorry for him. Yeah,
it's an Asian thing. It's an Asian thing, I wish my son were a doctor or lawyer, or engineer or programmer.
He was actually the director of the Ghibli Museum before he became a filmmaker. So,
okay, a museum curator. This sounds much more prestigious. Yeah. All right.
No, a lot of celebrity fathers or celebrity parents usually don't want their kids to enter the entertainment industry because the kind of pressure and the kind of life that you have to live as an entertainer of some sort is usually very, very stressful. I mean,
Oh, well.
Indeed.
Anyway, that pretty much wraps up the news section. All right. We're back, and this is usually the space where we talk about reviews. And so we didn't quite agree on an animated review or do some first impressions of the race. So you said you wanted to do, what was it, Strawberry Panic or something else?
Or Cold Gay Ass. I guess I'll just go with Cold Gay Ass until people get really sick and tired of my pronunciation. But I guess I'll start. What the hell?
Okay, yeah, why don't you go ahead and start?
One of the show that Mike's, Jeremy's club decided to pick up, I think. You guys were going to show it, or you're showing it.
We showed the first two episodes.
Yeah.
Is the show called Cold Gay Ass, or Lelouch the something something rather Rebellion, right?
Lelouch the Rebellion.
English. Yeah. Exactly. So it figures that the great empire, the good old country of United States, excuse me, Great Britain,
the Empire of Britannia.
That's right, actually took over the whole freaking world. And then there's Japan that fought to the end, just like they did in World War II, not. And then, so what happened is they sent out their nightmares, and to Japan at Country 11 and took over. And the Japanese were embarrassed because they didn't make the mobile suits. Oh, excuse me, no, that's because... They got their asses kicked by American, British, Britannians.
I'm sorry. Those guys have to be British. Just the way those guys
lords.
Talk.
Yeah. They have lords. No, they have an aristocracy. But I get the feeling that it's really still a thinly veiled reference to American not so thinly veiled a reference to American imperialism, because the map in the world you see in the first episode clearly comes not from Britain but from America.
Yeah, come on. Yeah, okay. That's right. And you're right. And then what?
And the pizza hut's everywhere. What more proof do you need that it's about American imperialism?
Yeah, it's a great British enterprise, Pizza Hut.
Right. The British invented the pizza. That's right. I didn't know that. See, I didn't know that. I wasn't born in the States. I didn't know that. The British invented the pizza, didn't they? You know, alongside with fish and chips, they invented the pizza. I have no idea.
Yeah, just like Kentucky Fried Chicken is really from Britain.
Right, and a lot of other stuff, spaghetti, anyway, sorry. But yeah, like, okay, then, anyway, so basically what happened is Japan become the country 11. And then, so what happened is they've been ruling under the Britannia rule for a long time. And one day, basically, this guy, Lelouch, he's not even Japanese. On his way, he just got into this terrorist thing, and the terrorist stole this, like, gas tank or something, like supposedly poison gas, and then he got into it. And then he ended up getting the superpower, because it was not a gas tank. It was something else in there.
No, I think it was a new model nightmare.
Well, no, it was a girl.
It was the girl. It was the girl with who grants mysterious powers.
His powers, exactly. Yeah. And girl got shot. Got the letters. So Lelouch's potential girlfriend dies, or potential love interest dies, and then the potential love interest becomes a Jedi or something, because she talks in his head and saying, okay, I'll give you this power. Your life will be changed. You've got to work for this or whatever. And he's like, oh, what the hell? I don't want to die. Give it to me. So basically, he got this superpower, and then he decided to be the savior of Japanese. While not even being Japanese, he's a good Britannian, I guess. I don't know. And his friend, who's actually Japanese, actually is forced to basically hunt him down later. Even though neither of them know that, you know, they're fighting each other. Neither of them know. Mm-hmm. And his friend, who's Japanese, I guess, is this kick-ass suit that fights like a kung fu master or something.
Yeah.
Forget about bullets. All he has is kick and throw out his like a scorpion spear like thing, and then they just beat the crap out of everybody. Oh, forget about bullets. Everybody was fighting using guns. They was beating the crap out of them with martial arts. Yeah.
Everybody was kung fu fighting.
and his attack was fast as lightning. That's right.
Yeah, that's right. That just sums up every martial arts show.
Pretty much that's how he began. I mean, I'm not saying the show is bad. It's just that it was so unthinly veiled. It was just like, oh yeah, USA. No, I'm just kidding, Britannia. God. Anyway, nobody talked with a British accent, so
English.
Yeah, but they were all prissy, though. Come on.
Yeah.
You can't be that prissy and not be British. To our British listeners, you know, hello. You can send hate mail to 977.
Yeah, we're in the United States, so just send to anybody you know in the United States, it'll work, basically. Oh, wait, I'm in Taiwan, so. No, but talk about the Pizza Hut logos, Mike.
Talk about it. The what? Oh yeah, the Pizza Hut product placement. Yeah, that's the reason why. Apparently, you know, Brandon was the one who pointed this out to us, and he actually made us order Pizza Hut that night. Except that he didn't show up, and we didn't even show the show. But
wait, was it? Yeah. No, that was
Yeah, that's what we did. Remember?
It was
the first time we tried to show it. We ran out of time, so we couldn't do it.
But that was the night I believe that we did order Pizza Hut.
Yeah, we did order Pizza Hut just for Brandon, because there's all these Pizza Hut like product placements in Code Geass, even more, and it's not just like the signs or whatever. Like, it's like it actually figures in the plot, I think, later on. Like, there's a character who actually is trying to win like a prize by ordering like Pizza Hut pizzas. Like, you know, it's those things that you can stamp every time you buy something. Like those cards, those frequent customer cards.
Saving up his like, box stuffed animal.
Yeah, I have no idea how much money Pizza Hut paid to get into this show when this is a show that is, again, very a thinly veiled critique of American imperialism, and Pizza Hut is probably the ultimate sign that America has taken over Japan Either that or Kentucky Fried Chicken, man.
No, but you have Pizza Hut logo everywhere. It sort of defeats the purpose, though. It's kind of like, you know, like, oh, we're saying American imperialism. Oh, wait, we need Pizza Hut guys to do product placements.
Yeah. And it's like, after you watch the show, you know, your main feeling isn't that boo America. It's more like, I suddenly feel like ordering pizza right now.
I know.
Yeah, that's the real effect the show's probably going to have. That's at least the effect that it had in our club for 1 week. But
1 week. That's about all it lasted.
Yeah,
there were mindless pizza zombies for one meeting.
Yeah. It only works once.
Okay, so next person, please.
All right, why don't you... It looks like you watched a little bit of Kyoshiro Totoa no Sora too, right, Jeremy? So
we can talk about this together. Yeah, I think like 1.5 episodes.
I saw 3 episodes. Kyoshiro...
Only, 3 out right now, right?
It's only up to 4. The 4th one just came out today, and I hadn't finished downloading it by this afternoon, so it just came out this morning. Okay, well, basically, this is a current show. This is a new show that came out this winter. It's one of those things that are supposedly one of the highlights of the season. Though, if it is one of the highlights of the season, I don't know, man. Well, basically, the basic idea behind the show is that I initially described it as a mecha show. That is only somewhat accurate. There are mecha, but they don't appear to be the focus of the series. Mm-hmm. The basic setup is that there is this really not very bright girl named Ku who goes to school somewhere in Japan, apparently after some sort of cataclysm or some sort of apocalyptic scenario where a lot of the cities got destroyed. Right. That hasn't been adequately explained yet, but... she is, of course, having a happy, normal school life, trying to hand her card to a boy, because that's what you do when you want to ask them to dance or whatever in the dance. And suddenly, this really handsome Bishonen guy shows up.
Oh, dear.
And he's like this member. He looks like some sort of prince that she keeps imagining, because like every episode is set up that she like is dictating a letter to her imaginary prince or whatever. And he shows up, and then suddenly, when he shows up, all this mayhem and havoc starts going around in the school. Like, things start blowing up. These, like, other opponents who are often really cute or moe or otherwise good-looking start appearing. And what they can do, apparently, like, this Bishonen guy, his name is Kyoshiro, actually. He's the title character. He and a whole bunch of other people, they call themselves Absolute Angels. They have the power. They're genetically engineered humans who have infinite ability to regenerate themselves, but their main power is that they can summon mechas. Like,
is that a 13th angel? Is that a 13th angel?
Well, they are basically kind of like, well, they're not really like the Evangelion angels, because the Evangelion angels were more like aliens. These are human beings who are genetically engineered to to have unlimited power and to be able to defeat any modern weapon on Earth. And I am guessing that the cataclysm or apocalyptic scenario happened because they went out of control. That's how these stories always work. Dear. But basically, Ku, the dumb girl, she, by one means or another, she falls into the arms of her beautiful prince, Kyoshiro, who rescues her from various dangerous scenarios. And here's the really interesting or appalling or weird thing about the show. This is a show that really seems to be trying hard to have equal opportunity fan service. The first episode is very much, however, the first episode is all totally shoujo fangirl bait. It is for the most part, though you can sort of get the hint that the character designs and some of the ways they do things are not quite the way they do things in shoujo, and that becomes very clear in the second episode, which is full of female nudity, yuri, and other things that are very much aimed at otaku slavering fanboys. But then they return to the fangirl baiting in the third episode.
No, I want to say, even in the first episode, they actually kind of lean in that direction when the main character, her prince lover, whatever.
Yeah.
He rips off Ku's shirt to find a mysterious mark that happens to be in her cleavage for some odd reason.
That's where it's always at. Or in even more private places in some other shows. That's where it's always at. And
on person's butt.
Yeah. And there's and he, not only that, he plays the violin and he rides a white horse. So That's what I meant by fangirl bait. And they have like, and they introduce him with lots of sparkles and flowers.
Too stereotypical.
Yeah,
no, that's aiming too hard. That's trying too hard.
That's trying too hard. I agree.
I just like the fact that they're all part of the mobile morality unit.
Yeah, that's what they call it. The moral like enforcement unit. That's what they call themselves. Like this
mobile
whole
morality unit.
Yeah.
But definitely that show is definitely interesting to say the least. I mean, just to see what's his name, Kyoshiro, bounding on a horse to save Ku.
Yeah.
Into a ravine.
On a white horse.
On a white horse.
And he plays the violin.
He's
such a prince. So bad.
And by magical means, the white horse turns into a nice pointy craft, silver craft that's called a unicorn.
Uh-huh.
To attack.
Yeah. Things. Yeah, you see, the way they do the mecha is that all these absolute angel characters can summon not only mecha, but parts of mecha. Like, they can turn their arm into a giant robot arm. And they can use that to punch each other.
Wait a minute. Yeah. It sounds like one of those Sentai shows.
No, it's not quite like that. There's no, like, people in, like, color-coordinated uniforms. like, getting,
do they all
combining.
Shout, do they all, like, yeah. Let's Gaikengang in!
Yeah, no. Nothing like that.
Ah, darn it.
It actually looks like it's trying to be dark and kind of serious. It's actually, later on, there's, like, this evil queen character who tortures another character, like, and then there's I forgot the one really important and strange and really I think it's really hilarious because it's such a transparent excuse kind of thing. You see, the only way the absolute angels can regenerate their power is by getting mana from humans, like mana, like power. And the way they get mana is by kissing.
No, that's now, that's the way you get mono.
That's where you get mana. And so you have
secret of the mana.
Yeah, and that is, it's the secret of the mana. You have to kiss, and usually you have to kiss either another absolute angel, but ideally you kiss another human being. And so a lot of these absolute angels have human retainers. Like, they call them their swords. Like, this is where they get their power from. And they do it by kissing.
Yeah.
And so in the second episode, you have girl-on-girl kissing because you have an absolute angel and human pair that have that relationship with each other. And they're not lovers. They keep insisting that all the time. We are not lovers. We don't think that way. This is just my power source. It's just my power source.
It's like to suck face in order to fight the evil hordes.
Yeah. Of course, Ku,
this
of course.
Not coming out of the closet.
I mean, and they actually comment on this really explicitly in the second episode. Ku is like really kind of shocked at first. It's like, no, but these are girls kissing, but it's strangely beautiful. And it's strange.
Okay, this person really is a guy. She's a guy trapping girl's body.
Oh, I think it's
no,
pretty
women,
clear.
Women
that
in real life find that disgusting. Most of them.
I'm pretty sure that whoever's writing this show is certainly a guy. It does not have the hallmarks of any. It's somebody trying to do shoujo, from somebody who doesn't know how it works.
Yeah, just the fact that Ku, the main heroine, she is really ditzy.
Yeah.
And her name, in fact, means also empty, like her empty head. So like this anime, empty.
Yeah, I mean that's a fairly standard shoujo character type though. The main character in a lot of shoujo shows are often real ditzes, like Fujiki Yugi, and actually probably the ultimate
Sailor Moon.
And it's they usually have a really bubble-headed girl because the audience can kind of afford to look down on them and feel
right.
Like
Sailor Moon is a real good Christian.
Yeah the person who writes for Sailor Moon, the manga artist, was apparently a Christian. And
I would not have guessed that. That's kind of strange.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, Sailor Moon have forgiveness, understanding, stand up to evil.
I see. But
anyways,
he got into anime through Sailor Moon.
No, especially the forgiveness part was very, to me anyway, was more Christian than anything. But anyway, all right.
Yeah.
So more about Kyoshiro, please. Anything?
That's pretty much it, because I've only seen a few episodes. I mean,
oh.
It really seems like when it boils down to it, it's yet another fanboy exploitation show, but it's trying hard not to be. It's trying hard to give equal time because, again, we've got all this female nudity in the second episode, but in the third episode, guess how it starts off? Lots of bare-chested guys in the shower. Yeah, so.
Sounds like fun.
I think I've been poisoned.
Yeah, well, so...
Well, how would you give a name to a show like these? You know, they're kind of shoujo, but it's clearly aimed at guys. You know, you have chick films and you have geek films.
Yeah.
You know, like films that are supposed to make guys cry.
Yeah.
And emotional. And like, oh, this is my father. I'm talking to him. Okay, all right. No. Drop
well,
that.
But I think those sort of films are like... Well, I think those kind of films are like Braveheart or Lord of the Rings, you know. A lot of manly courage and people sacrificing themselves.
No. That's different. That's like guys' testosterone films, like Gladiator, cut the heads off, and you know we're comrades. No, I'm talking about geek films. We're
like,
talking about
Benji,
a lot of
Benji,
emotional
come
stuff.
Home. Benji, come home.
No, I don't think. I think I know what you're talking about. It's stuff like Video Girl Eye or something where it's supposed to be emotional and it's.
But it's
aimed at men. It's aimed at men or young.
Well, that's Asian. I call that Asian. I mean film. I mean Kyoshiro or Girls High.
Yeah.
You know,
where all the main characters are female, but it's really not a female show at all.
No, it's not. That's just it. That's right.
I don't know what you call that.
Yeah, it's an anime term.
I don't know if there's even a special term for that. I don't think.
No,
that's
there isn't. I'm saying we should make up a term now.
No, we should actually. What would you suggest? I don't know any Japanese. So.
I don't know if geek would really work, actually, because that's an Irish slang for a shite, by the way, just so you know.
Oh, really?
What, can you say that again? No, the Irish name, the Irish term, shite part.
Yeah, it's an Irish slang word. Mm. Right.
How's it pronounced?
I have no idea. I've learned something new today.
Geek?
That's at least one of the definitions. So.
Geek? Really?
Really?
Oh, because some guy coined it. They say instead of chick films, it's a guy chick film, so it's a geek film. I didn't know it was an Irish word. Sorry, no idea.
Oh, it's one of a couple of definitions.
Mm. Okay.
Okay. I have no idea what you would call it. That's something that I think it's a relatively recent one kind of trend.
Yorinen, shōri film, shōri anime. Instead of shonen, instead of yuri, it's shōri.
Yeah, because it usually features lots of lesbianism of some sort, either implied or explicit. And
actually rip each other's clothes off, take a skirt up and say, oh, you're wearing this sword panty.
Okay. It's so transparent. It's like so...
Shōri. Let's call it shōri.
Yeah, it's really weird. This season, this winter, has had a lot of these exploitation kind of shows. It's either this... Or it's lots of really over-the-top moe type stuff, like Manabi Straight or Hitamari Sketch, or all this other stuff with lots of really bug-eyed, cute little 10-year-old-looking girls who are really in high school. And I don't really like moe. I think, Ray, you like it a lot more than I do, so I don't
really... Dude, that's because you don't understand it, dude. It's cute, it's interesting, it's almost pure to a degree, but some people take it to a hentai degree, they're bad. But I'm calling it shōri. For the guys, girl, bunch of girls in a guy thing, I'm calling it shōri from this point on.
Yeah, okay, shōri. All right, so would that maybe also include stuff like noir? Or,
no,
I mean, noir's more of an action film. But...
It's an action film. Noir is an action show.
I mean, the tough girl kicking butt has long been a feature of, you know, guy movies. So, anime.
Or anime, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to call it Zinarian. Named after Xena, the princess warrior.
All right.
Zenarian show.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's true. I don't think...
It's fun and geeky to say. So, yeah. Zenarian.
I thought Xena actually had a pretty large female audience, actually. Or maybe even Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Well, Buffy's actually much more broad-appealed, actually, I think. Buffy was actually really well done, so...
Have you seen Buffy, Jeremy?
Buffy? Yeah, of course.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not... a fan per se. I haven't watched a whole lot of it, but of course, I mean, it's pretty much, you know, American pop culture. So.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever also watch Firefly, the other Joss Whedon science fiction show? It's actually
Part of that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, some of my friends are really big fans of it. I actually think I worked with someone who is on that show really? Back when too as well.
Oh, that's really cool. Because I really liked it. I thought it was definitely cut before its time.
Oh, yeah,
I saw the
you're
movie.
Among many fans.
Yeah, and I saw the movie too, Serenity. Serenity movie wasn't, I don't know. It didn't work. It doesn't work out. It doesn't work on its own very well. It's very much a show. It's very much a movie for the fans, in my opinion. Even though they tried to use it as a way to reach new audiences, but yeah. This wraps it up for Scattered Cells Anime Podcast number 6. And we hope you're all listening out there, and we hope that you can leave us any comments, flames, and lots of additional hate mail since we've said so many controversial things tonight. And this is your host, Michael Huang, signing off. Everybody say goodbye.
Yes. We're coming from the British, the Holy
good
British
night,
Empire.
Folks, and good luck.